Andre Agassi, widely considered to be one of the greatest tennis players of all time. You can see that objectively just by the numerous titles that he's won. Also considered to be one of the most charismatic players in the history of the game and one of the men who brought tennis back from obscurity. But despite record wins, huge prize earnings totaling more than $30 million, Agassi admits in the autobiography Open that he hates tennis with a deep, deep passion. Agassi's here with us today to talk about what other things he would have preferred to do other than tennis. Good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
I'm so glad. You know, one of the things I noticed as I was reading your autobiography, which is extraordinarily well written, I should say, is I wondered how much thought you gave in before you became quite so open and so revealing in your autobiography, and whether or not you would have been as revealing if your kids were older and able to read it for themselves.
Well, my kids will be older, and unfortunately, the book will live in perpetuity, so that was certainly on the forefront of my mind in writing the book. But, you know, my decision in writing this book wasn't how open to be. My decision was to write it or to not. I mean, you know, you look at your life and you wonder about how inspiring it might be to somebody who found themselves inspired watching you from a distance, but if you could really sort of unlayer the psyche of the things you have fought against and the hill you've climbed throughout the years, what impact could that have? And, you know, that won the day. It won the day in my mind and my heart, and I sat down and set about a challenge of finding a literary lens that I could use to understand the narrative of my own life. And, you know, hating tennis is a kind of a simple way of putting it. It's a storytelling way, certainly, of putting it. But it's a complex emotion because it starts with a life that was imposed on me. It starts with a reality that I live with a pressure in our house that was pretty intense, being the youngest of four, with a plan for all of us to become the best in the world one day, the quickest road to the American dream. An immigrant is my father from Iran, and so he's a fighter by nature and was a boxer in two Olympics. So it was an intense household. I got sent away at 13 to a tennis academy, and tennis always came with a level of angst, a level of pressure in my life, and I don't think I ever really took ownership of it till I was a lot older.
Well, your relationship with the sport is almost less important than the fact that your relationship with your dad was really kind of what troubled you. And it seems almost as though as you became a father yourself, it seems to have sent you back, and as you retired from tennis, it seems to have sent you back to your roots in the sport and to your very troubled relationship with a father who wanted you to do what he did not do, to become a tennis champion.
Well, when I retired, I think it was the first time in my life where I had actually some time to look back on my life and, if you will, just make sense of it. I mean, I think it's a whirlwind of a life you live, and it's always the next week. It's always the next challenge. It's always the next match that defines who you are, even to yourself. So when I retired, I had the time to do that. I think I've been spending all these years coming to terms with a lot of things in my life, one of which has been my relationship with my father. I describe him, I believe, in a very lovingly honest way in the book. He's a very intense man, while at the same time, a man who's incredibly loyal, and it was always us against the world, and it was always a father believing in their son and the fact that he's going to be the next number one tennis player in the world. I mean, that also is a powerful emotion for a young boy. I mean, so there were a lot of times I was proud of how he felt about me and how he believed in me, and there were a lot of times I just wanted to hide, you know, because that did fall on my shoulders.
Well, one of those times when it seems like you wanted to hide was when he pretty much bet the entire family savings on a game between you and football great Jim Brown. Could you tell us that story?
Yeah, well, we walked into my club one day, and Jim Brown was in there, and my dad pointed him out to me, and he was fighting with the manager about his lack of money betting action that he had, a tennis match that he had some money bet on that had fallen through, and he loved to bet. I mean, Jim Brown, I used to see him in there from a distance, betting on backgammon and all sorts of stuff around the club, but he wanted to play tennis for some money, and my dad was pretty quick to stand up and say, I got somebody who'll play for some money. And so Jim Brown looked at me and thought he was kidding.
You were nine, right?
I was 9 years old. And,
oh, man.
And he says to me, you know, I only play for money. And my dad says, yeah, I'll bet you my house. And Jim Brown says, well, I don't need a house. I got a house, but if you want to play, you know, 10 grand is the number I'll play for. And I remember my dad leaving, going home to get it because Jim Brown wanted to see that money before we stepped on the court. And I just remember sitting there waiting in a long, you know, 25 minutes for my dad to go home and return back to the club with our life savings. Meanwhile, the club manager was telling Jim Brown, you know, Jim, I don't think you want to do this. You're a good customer. You're going to lose. And this kid's 9 years old, you know.
And after so he lost two games to you, he ended up only wanting to bet 500, right?
Well, he actually, before we stepped on the court, the manager had talked to me, and he said, you know what, I got to be honest, I'll pay 500 just to be able to say this 9-year-old kid beat me. So bet me 500, and it was 500 in the right direction as far as our lives were concerned.
You know, that's a great story, Andre. And your story is partly an immigrant story. It's partly an athletic story. I'm wondering, and I don't know if you have any connection to this at all. It's a very different story. But, you know, when you look at the troubles that, say, Tiger Woods has gone through, not really talking about the morality issue so much, but here's a strong father, a man who was programmed by his father into an athletic career, having difficulty owning his own life. Do you get any resonance from Tiger Woods' story thinking about your own?
Well, you know, listen, from the outside, there's only so much you can perceive and so much you can say. I mean, you know, I try hard not to judge certain things, and I'm not even referring to the moral aspect of it. You just sort of look at somebody and you say, you know, I have no idea what he's been through in his life and what he's been confronted with, but you do see the realities of certain decisions and the impacts it has on others, and that's heartbreaking. I mean, can you point it back to a relationship with your father? It's quite possible. I mean, that's how, you know, your understanding of the world starts there, gets molded there, but it's also an odd life. I mean, you know, you live in a
glass bubble.
Yeah, you really do, and everything's about you. And unless you have some great people around you, it's not that hard to make some bad decisions.
I got to ask you, your big passion now is your college preparatory school in Las Vegas. You were not a model student by any measure because you were so focused on tennis, because you had all these other things going on. I'm wondering what you say to the kids who say, look, why do I need to do well in school? You made $30 million at tennis without doing well in school.
Well, you know, the thing for me is pretty simple, which is I've always felt the lack of education in my life, and I found myself waking up in a life that I didn't choose. And I think education is options. I think education is choices. I mean, you learn a lot about yourself, and without it, I think if you don't happen to be good at something, you wake up in other places like prison and gangs and you know, it's not a road you should choose. You know, you should be able to choose your future, and without it, I don't think you can. So for me, I look back as one of my greatest regrets is not going to school and not really having that formal education, because I think you discover yourself, and I think it gives you a platform to really take ownership of your life.
Andre Agassi, the school is the College Preparatory School in Las Vegas. International tennis star, founder of the Andre Agassi Charitable Foundation. His book is called Open. Thanks so much. This is The Takeaway. I'm Celeste Headlee.
And I'm John Hockenberry.